Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. He is currently Skimbleshanks in the U.S. National Tour 6 of Cats, which is performing right now. So welcome, Christopher Salvaggio, and thank you for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I am excited to have you. I do love talking to Skimbleshanks. It's such an interesting character. I always love to know, for anybody that's in the show, what was your history with the show before being cast in it?
This is actually funny. I really don't have much of a history with cats at all. It wasn't something I was super familiar with. I didn't grow up a theater kid. So like a lot of theater kids grew up, they had that VHS, like the 98 version. I didn't have that. I had never seen it. I had never seen a stage production of Cats either. I didn't start doing theater until later, into like my middle and high school years. But what I did know about it as a kid, it was pretty much like not even really a synopsis, but just like the name of a few characters. Like I'd heard Grisabella, I'd heard Magical Mr. Mistopheles. These are things I've heard, but I didn't know anything about Cats. My introduction was really the first time I auditioned for a production of the show, which was actually for a cruise ship production. I auditioned like right when I moved to New York. And that was the first time I had like YouTubed clips of Cats and learned the songs and listened to the music and began to understand the characters a little bit more. That audition did not work out for me.
Yeah, when was that audition?
Let's say, I think 2018, probably.
Okay. I'm trying to think, because they went from doing a full production, I'm assuming it's Royal Caribbean, because that's the only cruise ship I know that does it.
Yeah.
They went from doing a full production to doing a 90-minute version. And yes. So, was this for the 90-minute version?
I do not know.
Okay.
That I don't know.
Okay. I don't know when they made the switch. I know they made the switch at some point in the run. It's been running for like 15 years, I think,
on the
cruise ship. And it's still going right now. Okay. So you auditioned. That one didn't work out. You get this audition and it does work out. And so what did you prep going into the audition?
So this audition, they sent me the material. So different from the first time around, I was in for characters that weren't like Skimble. Like I was in for other characters. This time around, they specifically sent me Skimble and they sent me like a packet is what we call it. So it was the Skimbleshanks song, two of the ensemble numbers and three dances. So that's what I prepared. And I didn't do much research, if I'm being honest, about the show again. We get a lot of auditions and like there's always stuff going on. So it's hard to like really put all effort into every single, like the backstory and research of every single audition. I kind of do that after the additional audition will go well, which is what I did. So I learned those dances. I learned the songs. By the time I got my call back, I became an expert on Cats and I had done more research and understood the show. So that way I could show up to my callback ready to go.
That makes sense. You can't, if you're putting a lot out there on auditions, you can't be an expert on everything. You just wouldn't have enough time. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So you get the show though, and you've kind of done your research before. Tell me about what you were told. Like I know you go through you get the story told to you. You have your kind of like days to learn it. Like what were you told about Skimbleshanks?
Skimbleshanks, the main thing that stuck out in my head, which is what I really like underlined when I was taking notes, is that he's like the fun uncle. Everyone loves Skimble and Skimble loves everyone. And uncle, I think, was the most important word because he's not the dad. I'm not the one who's like actively always taking care of in a father sense, but an uncle. They look out for you. They're more fun, more playful. That's the one thing that really stood out to me. And also that everyone loves Skimble. Skimble loves everyone. So I took that and allowed myself to make connections with each cat on stage and form a relationship with each of them, where I think a lot of the cats don't actually have a full relationship with each other.
Totally. I think there's some where there are very clear lines and there's some where there's kind of no idea. So walk me through some of those relationships. Like how do you like go through that when you're performing every day?
Sure. Yeah. So my first and most important relationship, I think, is with the kittens. And it's kind of built into the show for me. So when we were staging, there's a lot of moments Skimble's pulling away the kittens. while Monk is facing head off with Grisabella, I'm taking care of Syllabub, I'm taking care of Pouncival. So a lot of that's built in, but then I let that carry through into the other moments, like in the ball. I check in on them, how they're doing, like they're trying to greet old Dude, and I'm like, oh, how's it going? Like, going good. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm interested in the relationships of all of the cats, because I think there's like, if we think about the cat's family tree, there's some questions with Skimbleshanks. Like, what's the relationship with Tugger? Is like, are you with Jenny Anydots? Because there's like, in some productions,
Jenny, that's a good one.
They hold hands. And so like, are you
the
uncle for all of them? There's even one rumor that Corporal Cat is your adopted son, which is weird.
I've never heard that one. I like that.
Yeah, I just think it's weird that there's adoption in cats to begin with, but that's like one of the rumors I read online. So
I'm
always curious how much you kind of think about those things as you perform. Like, obviously there's a staging piece, but which ones do you believe is truth?
Jenny is definitely my other biggest one. And that's another one that they kind of set for me that I didn't have to find. They were like, oh, Jenny and Skimble, you guys are pals. And that was kind of the extent of what they gave us. I have a really great relationship with Michelle, who plays Jenny. So we naturally formed a great bond, and that kind of led to us believing that our characters, I think, are together. Like, that's my stance. I'm like, Jenny and Skimble, couple. That's what I really believe. And I put that into the show. Like, there are moments where we like hold paws, like one on top of the other, and we get to cuddle the whole time during Gus the Theater Cat. And also in a lot of those moments where I'm shooing away the kittens, she's shooing away the other kittens, we're like tag teaming, taking care of everyone.
Yeah. So that makes sense. She's the aunt, you're the uncle.
Yeah.
And then you've got all the kittens that are your nieces and nephews. What about some of the other characters, like a Mephistopheles, a Tugger, Rumpelteazer, and Mungo Jerry?
Yes. You know what's so funny about Mungo and Rump is that I almost don't see them at all during the show. Like, we have very, very few staged moments, which I also have to take as, oh, maybe like that relationship isn't a super important one for Skimble. But I always also thought when I was developing my character that Skimble, we know is type A, very on it, very regimented. Is that a word?
That's
a word.
Yes.
Sorry, I do that a lot. Yeah. But like, I'm like that too now. I'm very much like Skimble like that. But when I was a kid, I was not. I was more like Mungo and Rump. So I thought, maybe Skimble was the same way. So like, when I was developing Skimble, I think he looks at them with like a sort of fondness as like, oh, those were the days. Like, I used to be like that too, but I got it together. And
love it. So Skimble, so I like that you took the progression of Skimble's life. Like, back in the day, he was a little bit more feisty and disorganized. And now he's like the older uncle that keeps everything on time.
Yeah. I like to think he learned how to harness that energy. Like, he had that chaotic energy and he turned it into, now he's like a workaholic.
Yeah. Right?
That's what I think of Mungo and Rump. So I obviously am disciplining them throughout the show. Like, always like, come on, like, we're doing a thing here, trying to get them back on track. But like, I also think that I look at them like, oh, like they're younger and they're having fun. And that's what I used to be like, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. What about the relationship with Old Deuteronomy?
Old Deuteronomy. I mean, I think I have a pretty similar relationship. I think I know him better than the rest of the kittens, or the kittens and like most of the other adult cats. Like, I believe my relationship with him might be stronger, but I think that's also a Skimbleshanks trait. Like, he is very about himself. So like, of course, I think that my relationship is great. And Chris thinks that, and Skimbleshanks thinks that.
Okay.
I admire him. I look up to him. And I think my version of Skimble also kind of hopes to take over one day, if that's a thing.
Okay.
But it's not, obviously.
Okay. So I think that's a really interesting point about you wanting to take over. Because I think one of the questions that I always had with Skimbleshanks is Skimbleshanks even in the running for the Heaviside Lair?
I have two answers to that. The first answer is Skimbleshanks definitely thinks he is.
Okay.
Like, Skimbleshanks thinks he's number one choice. Like, he thinks he's it. But that's also a part of the Skimble, like, constantly kind of thinking about himself, not in a selfish kind of way, but in a prideful kind of way. Like, if someone's going to be the most like elite, ready to go, it's going to be him. Like, that's what he believes. But also in that same kind of prideful attitude, like, if someone's going to take over, who else is it going to be? Skimble. So like, I myself as Skimble thinks of himself as, he's just very proud of him, and he thinks he can do anything he sets his mind to, if that makes sense.
So you're, yeah, you kind of have this like internal dilemma of,
yes,
I should be in charge, but also I should be the choice.
Right. And for me, it all comes from like, he's self-regarding, very, not into himself, but, but yeah, is into himself. He knows he's good at what he does and can do it.
Yeah.
Is that clear?
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with this one because I always thought when you look at everyone making their case for why they should be the choice, I didn't get Skimble's song to be nearly as much of that, as much more of like,
yes,
look, here's how, look how great I am and look how important I am, but not like, here's why you should pick me. Except right. for there's one piece in there where it looks like he's handing a rat, I think, to old Deuteronomy. And I kind of joked, I thought he was bribing him. Like, hey, here's why, here's my bribe, why you should pick me. But I also realized that when he changed his clothes, I thought he was just taking his pants off in front of all the kittens, which I thought was really weird.
Sure. Then I guess that is weird. Yeah, I do agree. As not, this is Chris, not Skimble speaking. As far as the number goes, he's not exactly pleading his case exactly. But maybe in his way, he is like, I think he's just telling his story, which he thinks everyone is going to find to be incredible.
Yeah, it is a pretty cool number. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Building a train. Do you, I think like, I'm assuming, cause I know every stage and every production is probably slightly different with the tour because you've got different amounts of space, but I'm assuming you build the train every single time.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. I think the numbers really is really unique. And so I do like, how do you like, I know you auditioned and prepped for kind of like the dance number and obviously probably the tapping that kind of goes with it, but how much of like the rest of the show, like the ball and all these other things, like how much did you, when you did your research before your callback, kind of go in and understand, like, did you realize the ball was an orgy? Cause I definitely didn't pick that up until later. Okay.
No, I did not. And I've listened to your podcast before, so I've heard explanations and theories and such. And obviously we kind of don't really touch on that when we learn about the show, but it's implied. And like, once you hear the analysis, you get it. But no, I had no idea. I'm a very naive mind also, like me personally. So like, I wasn't going to pick up on that on my own.
Yeah, I didn't either. Granted, I've not seen the show nearly as much as this podcast would lend people to believe. But it is kind of wild to me of how sexual and over the top some of the show is in a show that's almost produced for kids at points.
Literally four children, yes.
And so I do think it's kind of a strange thing. Do you catch that? Like, do you think audience know that? Like, I think the cool part about the tour is that you get to get a very different experience versus being in one place for, you know, 2 years. Yeah. Like, you're going for 3 or 4 days or a week or even sometimes shorter. Like, you get a very different reaction, I think. So do you notice that tour crowds kind of react differently? Are people picking up on any of these things, or is it just like a first time for the most part seeing it?
I would probably say that they're not picking up on most of the things, if I'm being honest. I mean, when I have people come see the show, which I do pretty often, most of them unfamiliar with Cats will have the talk like, oh, like what happened? Like, what did you see? And they'll be like, dancing. Like, yeah. I'm like, okay, good. Okay. You know what? Round one watch. That's
the way you should.
I accept that and exactly enjoy it for what it is. But no, I don't know.
How much do you really prep people? When they come see it, do you give them like a heads up or a rundown?
If I talk to them before they come, I ask what they want. But if it's up to me, I say like, just watch. I want, cause I get enjoyment out of seeing what they understand and what they pick up on. And so nine no times heads out of 10, up. It's not, no, I don't like giving them a heads up. I mean, I tell them like when I come out on stage and what I sing and then when my number is, but as far as the plot and what's going on, I don't tell them anything.
If someone asks you after seeing it, what did I just witness? What would your answer be?
That's almost the same question as kind of what's the show's about. I always just think of it as like, it's a story about a community and redemption for someone who had to leave or left the community. In short, that's what I answer. It's about our tribe of special individual unique cats.
So it's essentially
their tradition, their ritual.
Yeah, it's basically reality TV.
Yeah,
you're watching, my favorite. You're watching reality TV. Oh, okay, wait. So what's, okay, now then this is a great question. What's your favorite reality TV show right now?
Oh my goodness. Literally all I watch is reality TV, so I don't even know where to start. But my favorite reality TV show of all time, I'm sorry. Actually, no, I'm not sorry, is Keeping Up with the Kardashians. But right now I'm obsessed with Housewives, like okay. Real Housewives. But I also like I'm obsessed with competition shows. Every summer I watch Big Brother. I love American Idol type shows. Like I love reality TV.
So I am convinced, and a lot of this podcast started because I thought I was watching a reality TV show, a weird cat version of The X Factor. Yes.
Sure.
And so I was like, that's how this came. But I want to do two things. So one is I'm not enough up with the Housewives to be able to do this, but I do love I could probably do this with you with the Kardashians. Let's pick which cat would be which Kardashian.
Oh my gosh, this is a dream come true. Okay,
so great. I'm sure you've thought about this probably more than I have, but let's start with Kim.
Okay, Kim, if I can kind of tweak the characters a little bit, is the Grizabella, but in her prime. So okay. When Grizabella was the glamour cat, that is Kim.
You know why this, I like totally agree with that one, is because I've always thought that Grizabella in her prime when she left the tribe is probably the sex tape type of like scenario. Sure. Which is that era of Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What about Khloe?
Khloe. So Khloe, I'm going to talk this out because I actually haven't thought about this before in my life. Khloe is the funny one. She is an uplifter. She also takes care of people. So I think I would say that Khloe might be Jenny Anydots.
That seems right. Kind of motherly because we know that's not Chris.
Yeah. Right.
So okay. And then, but where would you put Courtney then?
Courtney is a little darker, a little cheekier. I would say Courtney's personality. Let me think of all these cats. Honestly, wait, there's old Courtney who would remind me a little bit more of Rump, a little,
okay.
Like that, a little sassy-ish. But then there's new Courtney who, reminds me of Cassandra. Courtney keeps to herself. She kind of alienates. She's calm. Yeah. She's always watching. That's Courtney these days.
That was where I was thinking was Cassandra. Just kind of like, you know, like around. Mm-hmm. Very much there. Knows all a little bit in a way.
A little more mysterious.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep doing the daughters. Kylie.
Kylie. Sweet Kylie. We love Kylie. Kylie is a Leo, just like me, which is why I love her. So which cats do I really think fit that? And also she's like stunning. Who could that be?
Kylie. I have my thought, but.
Okay, who do you think?
I think it's Bomb Ballerina.
Yes. Yes. I just see that.
Very That's much good. Like, you know, mm-hmm. little diva-ish, but not too much.
I
Been
agree.
Through some stuff.
Yes.
And I think.
That's good.
And then Kendall, that's where I put Kendall is. Demeter potentially.
Demeter, yes.
But I still think one of them has to be Victoria potentially.
Yeah. Which one would have the Victoria quality? I mean, if we're talking like if we put Grizz back in busted Grizz like she is in our show, then I would say Kim is Victoria.
Yeah.
If she's not the glamour. Yeah, I love that. Kylie and Kendall as Bomb and Demeter.
What about Chris?
That's good. Ugh, Chris has to be old Deuteronomy.
Yeah, right. Orchestrating everything.
Yeah, she's part Old Deuteronomy and part Monk, because Monk is also, Monk tells the story, and this is Kris Jenner's story to tell.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, half and half.
I think we'll end with them. We're not going to pull in any other Kardashians or their aura, the other people around their business. Like, we're not going to touch Kanye or anybody here.
Oh, no.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break for some messages from our sponsors, and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Let's keep going. I want to hear a little bit about, you have done an amazing job with TikTok and like bringing in the cat's world to that. So how did you kind of get started with that? How did you like take off with this?
So how did I get started with just TikTok or like doing it as in cat?
A little bit of, I'm assuming those kind of are related, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, I started TikTok like during the peak of the pandemic as something to do. Like I wasn't working and I was home and I was bored and it was fun to do. But when I got to cats, I had never seen people really, I guess I had never used TikTok at the time when shows were opening, when shows were performing, because I started using TikTok March of 2020. So there was no show. So I was like, how fun would it be to be in costume and do that? And then as other shows had come back, I'd seen other people had been doing that too. So I just kind of found what fit for me. And I really like doing the cat transition videos and just like doing the fun dances in cat are enjoyable to me. I don't really do it for like views or anything like that, because I don't TikTok like that anymore. But I think it's just fun. And I like when our fans get to see it and they're like, oh, we saw you last week in this city. You were so, like, they just get excited to see us in cat as opposed to in person.
Yeah, it's super authentic, which is, I think what you just said is you're not doing it for views or for any like influencing type of need. It's because you enjoy it and you can see that, you can feel that. It's like, it's fun. It's everyone's having a good time. So it's a great point about them being like being in character. Mm-hmm. Cats is such a unique one for that, because it is so like, the costumes are so elaborate and so unique and different that the transition videos and some of those things are like really, really fun. And then the dancing's pretty fun too, because you still kind of do them in the cat movement.
Yeah.
Which is not something that most people do, like for a while.
It's so funny. Like you put on that unitard and you're like, you get a soft paw, your hand goes down, like you kind of sit in your hip. Like it's just so funny. It's just you're a cat.
Yeah. Have you noticed that? Like, is it only when you're in costume, or is it transitioned to other parts of your life?
No, my goodness. It has transitioned to other parts of all of our lives. We like walk around with soft paws, and like, I don't know if it's as a joke, but like we'll greet each other like that sometimes too. It's like, I don't know. Well, maybe we'll get rid of it someday.
Love it. Okay. My last tour question, then we're going to go to some of the rapid fires. I always love to hear, where, and we don't have to throw necessarily cities under the bus, but where's been a really fun place to stop that you weren't expecting?
So my favorite city that I had no idea that I was going to love as much as I did was Spokane, Washington.
Okay. What about it? Was it like good crowds, good fans, or just a cool place?
Yeah, the crowds were good, but it was like mostly the city. Like I had no expectations, which was the problem with some of the other places that we went on tours. I had big expectations. I had no expectations for Spokane, and it was right at the top of fall. The leaves were falling and changing colors, and they had so many cute coffee shops, and the weather was nice, and the vibes were good, and I love a bakery, and they had so many cute bakeries. It was just like a cute small city. It was really nice to us.
Now this is a dangerous question, so if we edit it out, we can edit it out. What's the place that you've completely disliked?
There was a few, and I will say, I should preface this. It's not that I disliked the city. It's just that I think while being there while working is a completely different experience.
Totally.
And so like, I didn't love being in Vegas while we had to work.
Ah, interesting.
I didn't love being in New Orleans while we had to work. There's not enough time and energy to give off to like really indulge and enjoy those cities.
Yeah, that's fair, because that's, I was waiting for you to say I'm from the Midwest, so usually like, people throw one of our cities under the bus, but that makes a lot of sense. That's like, it's a city that's really fun that you just don't have the bandwidth to do, because you're doing an exhausting show every night, needing the rest and come back. That's crazy.
That's the hard thing about working in general, and then also with cats, like you can't go out there and do a show with any less than most of your energy.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of our show.
Yeah, it is the athleticism it takes to get through like the ball, or just in general, the show is wild. It's absolutely wild.
It is.
Okay, let's transition to some rapid fire questions. So if you could be any other cat for one day, forgetting any like vocal range, dance ability, whatever it is. Just if you could just be anybody, who would you want to perform as for one day?
Grizabella.
Grizz? You just want to go belt one day?
Yep.
Love
hands
it.
Down.
Okay, that's not good for my last thing here, though. Who are your favorite and least favorite cats?
As far as Chris, like watching the show?
Yes. And not, not Skimble Shanks. You as a person watching it and not character, not actor.
Character. I like Jenny Any Dots. I like Miss Stowe. And I've grown to really like Bomb and Demeter, too.
Okay. What about least favorite?
The least favorite cat? Like, I don't I don't want to offend anybody. I don't love the Mungo and Rump number.
Interesting.
I just don't love that one, which I feel like is a favorite, but it's not my favorite.
I've always wondered if it's a favorite or if it's one that gets stuck in people's heads because it's very repetitive and catchy.
It is. I mean, it gets stuck in our heads all the time. So that could be it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that might be it. Because that was when I walked out of the first time I saw it, that was the one that was stuck in my head. And as I've seen and listened to more, it's like, all right, that's not necessarily my favorite. McCavity is probably my favorite.
McCavity's good.
But it's a unique one. And it's like, you can't forget it. And it's also one of the few times where in the show, it always feels like a sensory overload. And that number doesn't feel like a sensory overload because it's just the two of them. And so it's a little bit easier to kind of process what's happening at that moment.
Yeah. And it sticks out. It's like one of the very few numbers where it's just two people on the stage. There's no one else.
Yeah.
So it sticks out. The rest of us pretty much have ensemble numbers.
Yeah. What about favorite song?
My favorite song outside of Skimbleshanks, because I'm biased, is definitely Memory. I love that song. I always have.
This is not looking well for my very last question here. I think we're going to get a Grizz defense here. Okay, before we get to that.
Oh, you might not. You might not.
Oh, okay. I love this. Okay, so my last question before we get to that question is, if one of the cats was to become a TikTok star, which cat do you think would be the TikTok star?
Oh, which cat would be a TikTok star? Okay, well, Tugger would definitely be a TikTok star. Tugger knows how to grab an audience, and that's the number one thing. Getting views on TikTok is you have to catch their attention. And I'd say out of all the cats, Tugger is the best at grabbing attention.
Yeah.
Misto, I think, too. He's flashy. He's cute. Like, people would like him. I'd go with those two.
Yeah, I think I've spent more time thinking about this than I should. There's those two. I think Bomb and Victoria would be the one creating a bunch of dances.
Sure, yes.
And then I think there's a world where Bustopher Jones is a TikTok influencer with like cooking or something.
Oh, I see it. I totally see it. There are those lifestyle TikTokers that like you just kind of want their life.
Yeah, he'd be niche.
And that's Bustopher.
He'd be niche. Yeah. Like he'd have a very core demographic that he'd be going after.
I would follow that.
But
I would follow that.
That's my wild card pick there. Okay, my final question, the $1 million question, which we will spend some time on here, is I don't think Grizabella is the right Jellicle choice, and so I would love to hear from you, Chris, maybe Skimble, who do you think is the right Jellicle choice and what is your defense for them?
I have two answers to this question.
Okay.
First off, I will say Chris, watching the show outside of being in it, I would not have picked Grizabella. I completely agree with you.
Amazing.
The wrong cat died, period. But I have an answer that I would have picked if I had just been an audience member of the show and not in it. And that would be Gus.
So Team Gus.
Like completely separate from me being in the show and knowing what I know about the show. And I would, like, just as an audience member going in blind, watching the show, I would probably say Gus should have been picked.
And what's your reason for Gus?
Almost in the same way as Grizabella. He looks like he needs it. Like, he's just so old and he's suffering from palsy and he's so sweet and it's just his time. No more suffering for him.
Yeah. So it's the criteria is need and worthiness.
Right. And this answer, it's about need.
Yes.
Okay. I have an answer of who I think is the most worthy.
Okay.
And who should have been picked in reality now that I know all about the show. And that would be Skimbleshanks.
Okay. I love it.
He is the hardest worker up there. He's behind the scenes. He's taking care of people. I think Skimbleshanks is the tribe. I think he makes it go round.
So here's a counter debate to that, which I think is interesting, is because I do think it's like, that's the same argument for Jenny, is Skimble and Jenny are like, they're there. The counter argument is that if they leave, then who's stepping up and taking over to do that? Like, can the tribe survive if they don't, if they're not there to kind of keep stuff in order?
That's a great question. Could the tribe survive without Skimbleshanks? And yeah, I don't know.
Literally, the trains will literally go off the tracks if you're not there.
I know. Someone's got to be learning that.
Yeah.
Someone's got to be ready because Skimble deserves his moment. Like, that day will come.
So I totally agree. I think that's what makes Skimble and Jenny interesting is that is they make a clear picture that Old Deuteronomy has a successor of Monkey Strap.
Yes.
And it's clear that there's like Demeter and Bomb are sister. You know, it's like there's a couple other people that they're together. And it's like you could say they're part of there. The harder part, I think, is with Skimble. It's like if you leave, there is no backup person to kind of come and take over with the trains. If Jenny leaves, there's nobody there to kind of like teach the cockroaches and mice or whatever else to go. It's like, it's a very specific job. And so it
that
doesn't, the show doesn't do a good enough job for me giving the, okay, they're ready to go to pick them.
Right. You know what? Hearing that, I do agree that the tribe may not be ready for them to go, but the question is, are they still worthy? Should they still get to go? Like, do they, is that their also responsibility just to wait until someone steps up to the plate?
That's a good, that is a very fair point. Like it's still, they still are the most deserving in your eyes.
Yeah. They've put in their time. Yeah, they've done the job.
So they don't need to worry about it. They're leaving anyways. It's somebody else's problem. I kind of love that. True. Hey, here, you get to clean up the mess. Okay. So if you were to rank, well, let's go back a different, let's take this question back a step. If you're Old Deuteronomy, you've just given two very different criteria with two very different answers.
Yeah.
How is he picking? Like, what is his decision every year?
That is a great question. I think, I mean, we know what happens, so we clearly know what his criteria is.
Yeah.
But
we assume that it's redemption.
Yeah. I think what I see in Old Deuteronomy that makes this show what it is his heart. And so I think he really decides what's going to be best for the tribe this time around. And obviously what's going to teach everyone a lesson. That's his job, is he is bestowing wisdom upon us. So I think that's how he makes his decision. How can we all learn and grow? Does that make sense?
It does. I've heard this a lot of like, he's got to teach a lesson. I've heard that he might not have made his decision, or he actually probably had a different decision made when then Grizabella comes back and that's where he realizes a lesson.
He had a different decision made. That's what I'm playing that every night.
Yeah. That it was probably Gus and then Grizabella comes back.
I'm playing that it's me. We crawl into Old Dude for him to make his choice, and I'm brushing off my vest. I'm ready to stand up and say thank you, and then dun dun dun.
I love that. So you're like you're the first act. You're ready to go. It's like there's no doubt it's you, and you're playing that every night. And then all of a sudden, Grizabella comes in and ruins your time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, okay, the challenge I run into with this show, and why I've debated this for so long, is that we only get one ball. We get 41 years of one ball, but we only get one ball, which means that I don't know last year's criteria or choice. I think one of your other castmates assumes that they were the choice, so that Victoria was last year's choice, and that's why they're being the you know, in this year. I don't know next year's choice. And so I think it's really hard to identify his criteria. And I think that's a gripe of mine with good old Deuteronomy, is that like... I don't think he has any idea what he's doing. And I think he's just kind of winging it. And I think that's why he's making the wrong decision here. And it's time for him to go.
Yeah. I mean, that's the case a lot of the time. Like, we think these people know exactly what they're thinking and what they're doing. And they're winging it just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
So I hear that.
Okay. So I hadn't thought about that way. So do you think any other cast members, not cast members, characters, like, but play that same thing of like, do you think like a let's take Gus is like, oh, I'm getting picked now, and then Old Deuteronomy comes back, and that's why you all hate her, is because you realize that ruins your chance?
You know, I actually don't think anyone else is playing that angle in that moment. They could be. I'm honestly too busy brushing myself off, like ready to win, to even notice.
I mean, that feels very skin, but like you're in your world. It's like, this is my this is me. Like, I'm definitely the pick, and then it goes, okay. Do you have a baby Grizz in the first number?
We do.
On tour? Do you have any, like, do you show any animosity to Baby Grizz in that first number?
No.
Should you, though?
Should we? That's a great question. I don't think so. I think for me, or my understanding of that is Baby Grizz. And Baby Grizz had a different relationship than Miss Grizz does.
See, I always thought Baby Grizz was like the reincarnation of that Grizz. And so it's like the, you know, the foreshadowing of the decision.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then I think you should be like angrily dancing around her.
Maybe I should. We have a moment. So maybe today that will happen organically.
That has been my goal from day one of this podcast is to influence how people perform in this show live by giving different scenarios that are plausible, but not like clearly stated.
Totally.
So I love you're gonna have to let me know when you play it tonight and you go in and you like hiss at Baby Grizz because she's gonna steal your thunder in an hour. Oh,
man.
Let me know how that goes.
Okay.
I love it. This has been fun. There's a lot of things I hadn't thought about. Like I always thought Skimbo was in the running, but I never really knew where to place him because it also feels like he's in the tribe, but also by taking the train every day, not fully in the tribe. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, is he even eligible? That was always my question, is he even an eligible cat for the Heaviside Layer? And your answer is like, of course he is. He was the choice until Grizz came back and ruined it. You know, good old Kim Kardashian came back and stole the thunder.
It's always me versus Kim Kardashian, and Kim always wins. Yeah,
story of everyone's life, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. What haven't I asked you about the show? You're doing it every night. Like what else haven't we covered today that you were like, oh my God, I can't believe we didn't talk about this.
What haven't we talked about? Well, did you tell me your choice? Who's your choice at the end?
I think the logical answer for me, as I've done 70 plus episodes of this, has turned into Gus.
Sure.
The very first time I watched it, I watched Leona Lewis and I thought I was watching a weird X Factor. And so in the X Factor, they always have a history of combining singers into groups, One Direction, Fifth Harmonies of the world. So I wanted to send Tugstopheles, Misto and Tugger together.
That's cute. That was like when you saw the show, like you left and said, that was like your initial thought.
I don't think I put like any thought into it at first. I walked out like most of your friends who go see it was just like, that was an experience. And then I saw it again and then I made a joke about it one time. And then when the 2019 movie came out, the trailer came out for that. That's when I made the joke that Grizabelle was the wrong choice and said, put the picture with that and said, welcome to my TED talk. And that is how this whole podcast started. And then I was like, okay, well, here would be my answer to that question. And it was Tugstopheles, depending on which version. I've said both.
I like that.
I think it's, a little Bert and Ernie going up together. There's all the fan fiction is written about the two of them. Like they're a unit together to me.
It's so funny because doing the show, I never really thought of that. Like I've seen it on the internet and like Zach Bravo, who played Tugger originally for us, like was really into that. And like, that's something he played into on his social media too. But it's not something that I want, like being a part of the show. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a duo. I don't see that.
The only thing is they kind of like introduce each other a little bit. Like I think, was it Tugger introduces Mistopheles in the beginning of the song? There's like some version of that. And then there's a little bit of an annoyance in one of the songs that's like, ugh, them again. So I think there's that type of like, they have a couple moments that people can like lean in on. And then people have run with that and they have like run with that because if you read the fan fiction, like it is aggressive and they run and the pictures are aggressive.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of the fan fiction. Very fun.
Yeah.
Very. I do love that. Like that's something special about the show is that people take it and run.
The fans are passionate and
yes,
have a good time with it. Have found, I think, you know, as I've interviewed a few super fans, and the thing I kind of have noticed with everybody is, and this is true for everybody, not just the super fans, but there's probably one cat that you can relate to. Like there's some personality trait of you in one of the characters. And so it gives you like, it relates to so many different people, depending where you are, what's going on. And that's what's unique about it is it takes you out of this kind of like current world into this like very strange, but creative and fun and unique world, and you've got somebody that you could say, I kind of feel like that's me. That's my cat. And so I think people like that.
It's definitely special.
Well, this has been super fun. A couple things. I love that we got to do the Kardashians too. I always love when we can compare cats to other other people. How can we stay in touch with you on social media and everything else you got going on?
Totally. All my social medias, my Instagram, my TikTok, my Twitter are all at @Salvaggio_Chris. And I also have a YouTube channel, which is called According to Chris. If you look up Chris Salvaggio, you'll find it. I do a lot of vlogging here on tour. It's a lot of fun. You want to keep up.
Awesome. Well, we'll link all that as well. So everyone can see it in the description and get right to it. And you can see all the fun TikTok dances and the vlogs and everything else that's going on.
I also have to say before we go is that I love the Michael Jordan painting behind you. Yeah. I'm a big basketball fan. Surprise.
I love it. I have mostly sports behind me. And so it's always a unique thing for the people whenever I talk about cats, because I've got pure sports. I mean, I've got Jordan and I've got Jack, the golfer. And then this, I'm not doing a good job pointing here. This is a quilt that is all Indiana Pacers t-shirts.
Oh.
So I also have that basketball. And then I think that's it near. I used to have a pillow. Oh, I think I still have a pillow. Maybe if I move. I have an Indiana Pacers pillow and a Google pillow.
I love that.
So yes, those are my behind. You're also currently in Milwaukee when we're recording this with game 7 of that team playing basketball.
Yes, the Bucks. They had a game the other night. Downtown was packed.
It was packed and they lost. So it was not as eventful. It would have been a pretty wild experience had they won there in that game. But they also play today while we're recording this. It will come out later. So,
cool.
Yeah. Well, this was amazing. So thank you for being an amazing guest.
Yay, thank you for having me. This was fun.
And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.